follow me down this deep, dark hole.
Hello, and welcome to New Horror Express, your fortnightly podcast, chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer, as presented by the Morbidly Beautiful Network. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on today's show, not for the first time, I am talking to actor, director, and screenwriter Graham Skipper, who has not one, not two, but three films coming out in the month of December. Those films are The Leech, Christmas Bloody Christmas, and Scare Package 2, Rad Chad's Revenge. And we talk about all three of those films in detail, although in spoiler-free detail, should I say, more to do with how he came on board each project and his experience of the shoot of each project and what he felt he brought to each character that he plays in each film. Plus, we talk about Graham's acting process. We talk about how he never likes to play the same character twice, and we talk about whether we will see him in the director's chair again anytime soon. Plus all the usual tangents and nonsense that you've come to expect from this show. All of which, and much, much more, you can hear right now in my interview with Graham. Hi, Graham. Welcome back to New Horror Express.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
It's always good to have you on the show. So we got you on the show today to talk about a number of things. You seem to have like a lot of movies coming out in December. Yeah. December is all about you, Graham. First of all, we'll talk about Scare Package 2, because I also have an interview coming out with Aaron Kuntz, the director, or one of the directors, the director of the wraparound story of Scare Package 2 and kind of the creator behind Scare Package. So first of all, let's say, how did you get on board Scare Package 2?
Yeah, I was super excited about it. You know, really, Aaron just reached out to me. And he and I have been friends for a long time. You know, obviously, we both sort of run in the indie horror circles. And he reached out and said, you know, and asked if I had any interest in being involved in Scare Package 2, which, being a fan of the first one, of course I was. And and he sent me the script, and I thought it was hilarious. And I especially was excited at the idea of getting to wear a full body prosthetic, which I've never been able to or had the opportunity to wear before or to put on before in a film. So I was really excited about it. It was a really fun project, worked with a lot of great people. And I think people are really, really going to love the film.
Yeah. I think they're going to love many moments of the film, many moments that you're a part of. And we discussed some of that in my interview with Aaron. So I think it's okay to say that the full body prosthetic you're in is something of a Hellraiser tribute. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Was that difficult? Obviously, you know, full body prosthetics is often something of a challenge for actors. Like, can you tell us a little bit about that?
It definitely wasn't comfortable, but it was super fun. It certainly is a Hellraiser, you know, Frank, tribute, that outfit. Really, really amazing design by David Greathouse. It took me, I think initially it took something like 2 hours to get into, you know, and then about an hour to get out of. And then we got that time down to a little bit quicker over the course of the shoot. Yeah, I mean, it was really fun. You know, it's so interesting being in an outfit like that. You know, you are at once very constricted in what you're able to do. I mean, I left a trail of slime and blood everywhere that I went. You know, getting on the phone was very challenging. Even eating was a challenge. But at the same time, it's kind of freeing because you are really not yourself. You know, you are fully in this, you know, other existence, as it were, while you're in that outfit. So it was really fun. It was really cool. I really enjoyed that process, you know, working with the special effects team every day and spending all that time with them, getting into and out of the prosthetics, was an adventure and was really fun. I really wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean, as uncomfortable as I was, I enjoyed every minute.
And how long did it take to kind of get in and out of with that?
You know, I mean, at first, I want to say it took about 2 hours to get into it, and then around an hour, maybe 45 minutes to get out of it. And then we got that time down quicker as the shoot went on.
All right, okay. And I think, like, in terms of like your scenes and scare package too, they're not exactly, I don't want to obviously go into too much kind of the spoiler realm, but there is a couple of moments that I think don't spoil the movie too much, that you're a part of, I did want to talk to you a little bit about. I was quite, first of all, the beer pong montage. How many takes did that take, and how fun was that?
Super fun. I can't remember how many takes we took, but yeah, I mean, that was a blast. I personally am a big beer pong fan. I have played many a game of beer pong in my life, so I just loved that moment in the script anyway. And yeah, I mean, we did a number of takes. We did a number of different types of sort of celebrations and moments, especially with me and Jeremy, in that slow-mo stuff. That was really fun to shoot. So I can't remember how many takes we did, but it was that was definitely a highlight of filming for me.
Right. Yeah. So you're pretty good at it. Something of a beer pong expert.
a little bit. I mean, I don't know if I call myself an expert, but I am well seasoned.
Okay, that's good. The other thing, which again, it's not really a spoiler, it's something that listeners will hear in my interview with Aaron later, is that he informed me that the dance you do is a tribute to the Crispin Glover dance in Friday the 13th part 4.
Part 4, yes, yeah. Yes, the final chapter. It sure is one of the most iconic dances in horror history. I mean, he wrote that into the script, and of course I instantly knew the dance he was talking about, but I did have to watch it on YouTube a whole bunch to try to really match the majesty of Crispin Glover as best that I possibly could.
Right. I mean, yeah, that was kind of going to be my question. Like, how many times did you rewatch it just to kind of nail it, perfect it?
Oh, countless, you know, and I would sit there with Aaron, you know, watching it on my phone, going, all right, okay, we're going to do this. Okay, let's try it again, you know, and we just keep trying it. I mean, it's tiring. It's a physical dance. But yeah, that was a really fun throwback that really spoke to me as the horror fan that I am.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I imagine it must be tiring because, like, Crispin Glover does a lot of those kind of weird, herky jerky kind of movements that, like, seem almost kind of unreal.
I don't know. Some higher power is, I think, speaking through him in the language of dance in that moment.
I think maybe so. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, like, so that's one of your films that's coming out in December. But you have not one but two other films which will also be coming out in December.
It is a very skipper Christmas. Yes,
it is a skipper Christmas. So like, yes. So before we kind of get into the two other films, spoiler alert, are Christmas horror movies. So like, are you a fan of Christmas horror movies? Are you a big fan of Christmas horror movies before we talk about the other two films?
I am. You know, I'm a fan of Christmas movies in general. My whole family is, you know, all about Christmas. And you know, so I grew up on things like National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, you know, A Christmas Story. I'm throwing Batman Returns in there as a Christmas movie. Gremlins. You know, and I Die Hard, which is a Christmas movie. I don't know why people keep arguing about that, but you know, whatever. Yeah, you know, so I've always been a fan. I'm so lucky that I've gotten to do a number of Christmas horror films. You know, I the first one was Rebecca and David Ian McKendry's All the Creatures Were Stirring, which I was lucky enough to get to be a part of. And I love them. You know, there's something about having a film that you, this is going to sound weird, but that you have an excuse to watch every single year, you know, and especially something that has all of the trappings of this holiday that is, mm-hmm. is, you know, for most people joyous and, you know, there's a childlike wonder to it. You know, it's all stuff that like is feel good, right? And then when you throw a horror aspect to it, it just makes it that much more special. I think that the first Christmas horror film that I ever saw was likely Gremlins. And I remember being just really loving the fact that, you know, here we have you know, all the trappings of Christmas with this sort of fun violence. You know, then you have something like Black Christmas, which is not really a very fun movie, but it equal parts makes you scared and makes you feel in the Christmas spirit, which is something that I think is very, very hard to do. So it's always been a dream of mine to get to be a part of Christmas horror films. And now I'm as of right now, I'm in three, you know, and four, if you count Scare Package 2, even though it's not really a Christmas movie, but by God, it's coming out the week of Christmas. So, you know, we can include it there too.
That is true. That is true. Scare Package 2, which I believe I'm right in saying is coming out the 22nd
on Shudder. Yeah.
22nd of December on Shudder. So listeners can look forward to that and my interview with Aaron that comes out in the same week. I guess like we can throw that in there before we dive into your two other movies. Do you have can you pick a favorite Christmas horror?
Oh man, that's tough. I mean, you know, one that immediately pops into my head is Christmas Evil, which I think is a film that a lot of people have sort of passed over or maybe haven't seen.
I love Christmas Evil. I've seen it a few times now. I agree. More people should see Christmas Evil.
Yeah, Christmas Evil is really good. It's not what you think it's going to be. I also am a big fan of Silent Night, Deadly Night 5, The Toymaker. I'm very excited about, I think Scream Factory is doing a new set of the later Silent Night, Deadly Night sequels. Right. You know, a lot of people talk about either the original or part two when they talk about Silent Night, Deadly Night, and those movies are good and they're interesting. But for my money, part five, is the real powerhouse of that franchise. That whole franchise really is pretty wild, but I really like those.
Yeah, I think since like Shudder have like put it out, I'm really tempted to. I've never seen Silent Night, Deadly Night, parts 3 to 5.
Oh, you gotta watch them.
So I'm like, oh, maybe this is a Christmas, because I keep thinking every Christmas for the last few years, I keep thinking like, maybe I should just watch the whole franchise. And I recently watched the remake a couple of weeks ago.
Sure.
So like, I've now seen part one and two in the remake, and I'm like, oh, maybe I should just complete it, you know, because there's that completist thing in me that's like, ah, oh, maybe sure. I gotta do this.
I have the same gene. Yeah, I get it.
So part five, I should look forward to part five. All right, okay. I think maybe this is a Christmas that I need to get this franchise watched.
It's going to be a real gift.
Is part five the one with Mickey Rooney in it? Is that
it? Is it? Okay, is right. Yeah. Okay.
That's fun times. Well, that's something to look forward to. But also something to look forward to is your two other two movies, The Leech and Christmas Bloody Christmas. I'll let you choose. Which one do you want to talk about first, The Leech or Christmas?
Oh,
Bloody
wow.
Christmas?
Yeah, I mean, I guess let's talk about Christmas Bloody Christmas first, because my role is smaller in that one.
Sure.
I think that, I don't know, the universe would implode if Joe Vegas made a movie and I wasn't somehow involved. And so Joe was kind enough to involve me and include me in his latest outing, which is so much fun. I cannot stress enough how much fun this movie is. It's Joe's biggest budget yet. He really throws absolutely everything at the camera. Shot in beautiful 16mm. I mean, it's a killer robot Santa movie. Like, what more could you possibly want? And I got to go and spend a few days on set and have horrible things done to me. You know, what more could you want?
You often have horrible things done to you. This is an interesting thing. You tend to be in Joe's films, but you often have something terrible happen to you.
I have never survived one of Joe's movies, and I'm proud of that fact. I think at some point Joe in an interview said that he just loves murdering me, which just makes my heart, you know, go pitter patter. I love that. I'm happy to be murdered by Joe for the rest of my life. I hope that happens.
Excellent. And so, yeah, how was it? I mean, like, what was like the setup in terms of like the giant killer robot Santa, like what was acting opposite? Like, what were you acting opposite?
So in the film, Santa is played by Abraham Ben Ruby, who is a good friend of mine, actually. I've been a friend of his for a number of years. He and I were part of the same theater company in LA. So it was great to act opposite him. And he's Santa for the majority of the film until a certain point when it becomes an actual robot that they built by Josh and Sierra Russell of Russell Effects. Mm-hmm. But when I was there, it was all Abe, and that's who I was acting opposite of. Abe stomping towards me in a Santa suit with a snow machine going. Pretty epic and pretty exciting.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's from the trailer it looks a lot of fun, and you were saying, so you play a smaller, is it kind of more of a cameo role in that one then?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of a cameo. Yeah, I mean, I'm a brief member of the crew that encounters Santa. Santa doesn't leave many people in this movie alive for long. So I'm in good company. I'm there briefly. But I hope that I make an impression. I get to be a real asshole, and I hope that people are happy when they see me get dispatched.
Excellent. I mean, it sounds like a lot of fun. It definitely seems like it's going to be a wacky Christmas this year. A lot of things coming out with this film. And also there's that Christmas Die Hard film, Violent Night. And there's a lot of wackiness this Christmas. I'm enjoying it. I'm here for it.
Me too.
Of those films, I was kind of wondering as well, I don't know how many of the three films were still filming kind of under COVID protocols. Like, how was that being an actor on that kind of set like that?
Yeah, you know, it's challenging. I mean, with Joe's film, it was, you know, I would say sort of at the tail end of kind of the most intense COVID stuff. But still, you know, you had to get tested every day when you arrived, you know, masks on set, that's that whole thing. With The Leech, we filmed in the thick of the pandemic before the vaccines were available. So It was really, that was really a challenge, and that was really scary. You know, we for I think most of us, it was the first time that we'd seen other people outside of our household in, you know, a year. When we filmed The Leech, you know, it was certainly the first time that I'd been on a plane, since the pandemic started, you know, and again, I mean, it was all done, you know, according to protocols, like we were tested every 3 days, you know, and all that stuff. But fortunately The Leech was done with such a small crew and such a small cast, and we were all living together, that we formed our own little bubble. And that in and of itself was fun. You know, it was, again, it was the first time that a lot of us had really been outside of our own personal bubbles. So here we are now suddenly getting to be with other people, you know, at the end of the shoot day, we're setting up the TV and watching movies and, you know, ordering Chinese food in. And it kind of started to feel like real life a little bit. So it was a really special, but certainly scary moment. I mean, if at any point anybody got sick, you know, that was the end of the shoot. And on a budget that low, you know, if you have a delay, that just means the shoot's over. So it was definitely precarious, and everybody was very careful. But we made it through, and it was a very special couple of weeks.
Yeah, I can imagine. And is that like a lot of pressure on you as an actor with The Leech, you know, because certainly from the looks of it, it looks like it's mainly the three of you for most of the film, and having that on your shoulders of you know, like you know, you have to keep an audience engaged with a minimal amount of actors. So is that a lot of pressure as an actor?
I mean, you know, yes and no. I think it's more about serving the script and serving the story, which is what I'm always all about. You know, that's what the actor's job is. And you know, this is a story that centers around, you know, these four people, you know, who are sort of at the core of this story. You know, and I kind of knew that going in, and you know, for me, you know, rather than I guess saying that I felt pressure, it was more just wanting to make sure that I did the role justice, because Eric wrote a really beautiful script and a really beautiful role. And I was very grateful to have that role and get to play in that world as Father David. So, you know, if there was any pressure, it was just to do justice to the script that Eric had written.
Yeah. I was also wondering how much of a challenge was it to play that character? Because like in films I've seen you in before, either Joe's films or Scare Package or your own film, you know, like the Sequence Break and stuff like that, you often play I've seen you play a number of kind of goofy characters or kind of scumbag characters, but like playing a priest, it seems like something a bit different for you.
Yeah, definitely a different type of role. You know, again, Eric wrote a character in Father David that has such a huge arc, and that's such a gift as an actor. So I was really excited to sink my teeth into what he'd written. And I worked with Eric a lot, you know, beforehand about how to approach the role. You know, I grew up in a religious family. So, you know, trying to, you know, add a little bit more authenticity to some of the religious aspects of things. You know, I'm not religious anymore, but I have a lot of that baked into my DNA, just from growing up. So that was kind of fun and interesting. Yeah, I mean, you know, Father David, yes, he's a priest. Yes, he has extreme religious beliefs. However, he's also a guy with a lot of internal issues and lots of layers to him that he hasn't quite sorted out for himself. And I think, you know, the real gift of this role was being able to play, you know, play somebody that on the surface is, to play somebody that on the surface is very, you know, strict and regimented, but that underneath, you know, sort of yearns to be, I don't know, to be a bad boy, you know, to sort of yearns to be not what he's supposed to be. And I think that that process and that, you know, getting to play a role like that, it was just really, really fun. And Eric's a great director, and he was able to guide the whole process. And then having, you know, Jeremy and Taylor Rigo to play off of, you know, it created this really beautiful little chamber piece that I think came together really, you know, really beautifully.
Yeah. I did wonder, I was going to ask you about that in terms of playing off people. Jeremy Gardner, for listeners who might not know who we're talking about, has a particular very intense screen presence, and I was wondering how that is to act against or act off of. I mean
it's wonderful, you know. It's mm-hmm. wonderful. He's a great actor, and you always want someone that when you're in the same scene as them is going to be going full throttle, and mm-hmm. Jeremy always goes full throttle. And I've been friends with Jeremy for a number of years. You know, we've done a couple of movies together, but haven't ever really gotten to fully go toe to toe. And so this opportunity to, you know, really stand against him and spend so much time on screen with him, it was great. It was a total gift. He was a blast to work with. He's one of the sweetest people that I know. And yeah, he's a phenomenal actor. So, you know, the having an acting partner that is that good, all that does is it makes you have to step up yourself. Right. And so I knew that I was going to have to really bring my A game to be able to stand up to him. And I was grateful for that.
Yeah. And what I was kind of wondering, what's kind of your process as an actor, like to get into the, it seems like there's a big narrative arc there in terms of like a kind of very repressed character who is very much one way at the start of the film. And then, you know, this is just from the trailer, kind of becomes unshackled and by you know, towards the end. And I was wondering, like, is there something you have to do to kind of get into the mindset of kind of in different stages of the film?
I mean, sure. You know, I think that the script itself leads Father David on his journey. You know, for me, when I approach David as a priest and as, you know, who he is at the beginning of the film, you know, I approach it as just, he's a person with intense conviction. you know, mm-hmm. that, and that he's not like bad or good. He's just, he is a person that fully, fully believes in what he preaches. And that, you know, as part of that, you know, everything that he does is driven purely by that belief that he is doing good, that this is what God wants. And what God wants is the most important thing. But then what's fun is that then as the film progresses and as his human side is more and more, you know, first annoyed, you know, then really infringed upon, it's that battle between the human self and the ideal that he's really trying to live. You know, so as far as like a process goes, it was really just about trying to put myself, you know, in his shoes at each different point and try to imagine, you know, well, what would this guy do? What would anybody do? You know, and how does his religious conviction sort of push back against, you know, if a normal person would just scream, get the fuck out of my house, what does David's religious conviction and his whole history with religion, how does that push back against that? And where's the tension that we can find to make this moment that much juicier and more interesting?
Yeah. I was also wondering, you often hear actors say that, like, whether you're playing like a character of opposite religious or political beliefs, or whether you're playing like a kind of villain or you know, a character, you know, it sounds like your character in Christmas Bloody Christmas is maybe not the best character, that it doesn't matter what character you're playing, you have to find you can't just play them as a movie character. You have to find some humanity in them. You have to find something relatable in them. Is that something that connects with you? Do you feel that's a truism?
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, with every character, you have to justify what they do and why they do it. Every character you play has to be the center of their own story. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, I think you can acknowledge and understand in the greater whole, you know, that, I mean, to use a classic, you know, a classic sort of Shakespearean, you know, analog, like if you're the spear bearer in Hamlet, are you the lead of that show? No. But the way you should approach that character is as if he is the lead of his own show. You know, and you go in and you have to approach that character as if he's the main character in his own story, because to him he is. Now that gets amplified in something like if you're playing a villain, you know, you have to, the villain never believes they're a villain. The villain always believes that they're doing whatever they do for some purpose. You know, maybe they, yeah, I don't know, if you're the Joker, you want to watch the world burn. You know, does that mean you're bad? No. I mean, to the Joker, he's a good guy. He's just doing what he wants to do because that's how he wants to do it. So yeah, I mean, everybody that you play, you know, you have to be able to justify and fully believe in what they are trying to do. You know, and in the case of somebody that's super religious, you know, again, I'm not super religious. I have the benefit of having grown up in a very religious household. And so I have some kind of personal, you know, history with that and some kind of a, you know, personal perspective that I can go off of. But yeah, absolutely. You have to, as an actor, be able to, you know, put aside whatever your personal kind of opinions are. Like you never want to play at who your character is supposed to be. You simply want to play the character, because that's where the power of the piece as a whole shines through.
Well, thank you for that very eloquent answer. That's very good. I was It was such an eloquent answer. It's thrown me off my questions.
it's a good question. It's a good question, and it's always hard, right? Like when you have roles that are, you know, maybe challenging morally, you know, and again, you know, the Leech, I think. And you know, I don't want to spoil too much, but I mean, there are a lot of questions that morally are very challenging in The Leech. And I think that Eric does a really great job of walking that balance beam of, you know, is the movie responsible for answering these questions? You know, is the movie even really asking these questions? Is there a question to be asked? Is it more just like we're throwing this out there and people can take from it what they want? And I think that Eric does a really great job with the script and with the film of, you know, having a movie that is full of challenging concepts and thoughts, while not necessarily feeling beholden to, you know, give an answer to all of them. And I think that's really special. And I think that's really cool. And, you know, a part of that process is being a character like Father David, who, you know, he has his own beliefs, you know, and I can't be concerned with, you know, trying to think about my own personal stuff with that. I've just got to play the role and trust that the film as a whole is going to, you know, the tapestry is all going to come together. And I think it really does. I think Eric did a really beautiful job of it.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, I look forward to checking it out. And I guess in some ways it's not necessarily, it's often beyond the remit of not just film but art in general to offer concrete solutions, but the best art opens the doors to discussions and sure. provokes thought.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that art necessarily has to like give you an answer, but I think that art that makes people talk about it afterwards is always a benefit.
Which is not to say that there's no moral responsibility in art. It's just to say that it shouldn't be beholden to, you know, it doesn't have to be beholden to a concrete truth in the same way that like a documentary or a work of journalism should be.
Sure. I think that's a good distinction. It's like, you know, art I think is able to ask questions without having to answer them. And, you know, that's, and like you said, there is a bit of a moral imperative to art, right? Like, I mean, I've just been reading about Kanye West and all the insane things he's been talking about. And it's like if somebody released a film that was praising Nazis or praising Hitler, I think, you know, and then if they were to say, oh, I'm just asking questions, well, I think that that's a breaking of that sort of moral imperative, right? But I think that if you have a film like American History X, which is talking about the subject matter, but not necessarily praising it, I think that's a different animal. And not to say that The Leech comes anywhere close to the kind of subject matter that we're talking about with something like American History X, but it does talk about some hot button issues, and it's I think it does a very good job of saying it's not even asking questions, it's just throwing a bunch of characters into a situation that have to deal with this element.
Sure.
And then you're watching characters dealing with the element. And I think in that situation, you know, it's not as important for, you know, there to be a nice bow at the end saying, and here's what you should think. I think that, you know, putting characters in horrible situations is what horror is all about. And that's exactly what Eric does, is he puts a bunch of characters into a horrible situation. And I think everyone in the film is morally gray. And I think that he leaves you to figure out where you stand.
Yeah, I think that's a good distinction. You know, the American History X example is a good example of you can explore nasty subjects and dark subjects and you know, kind of repugnant characters, and you can explore them in an interesting way that doesn't make them cartoon characters. It makes them still human, but without condoning the behavior. It's very much, it's a tonal fine balance, I think, like, you have to walk. Yeah. And when creating anything that explores a subject matter like that, because it's very easy to make it look like you're maybe condoning terrible behaviors and actions.
Yeah, I mean, representation does not necessarily equal, you know, a condoning of that action or of that people. But there is a responsibility on the part of artists, you know, Kanye West being a great example, to where, you know, you need to, you have a responsibility to not promote things that are, that are hateful or hurtful or harmful. You know, and promotion, again, is not necessarily the same as representation. And so I think that that's, you know, that's where it's challenging, right? And it's definitely a challenging thing. And you can have like horrible individuals in films, while also not explicitly, you know, condoning what they're doing. You know, but then you have other artists. Again, I was just reading about Kanye's interview with Alex Jones, so that's why I'm thinking right about that. But yeah. Then you have other artists who are, you know, doing things like that, which is just sort of unthinkable to me. But
I mean, the kind of stuff that Kanye has been saying, in terms of whether it be, you know, promoting Trump to this latest Alex Jones interview of like, Hitler's not all that bad,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
you know, like,
yeah,
it's pretty extreme stuff, you know. I mean, that is hateful stuff, and you know, I think yeah, it's fair enough that so many people want to deplatform him now, because like, if you're saying stuff like that, yeah, I mean, that's obviously disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, and how does all this tie into the leech? Well, yeah. You know, I mean, we sort of got far afield there, but the leech, you know, Eric does a really, really fantastic job of touching on some very intense religious subjects, but doing a great job of, you know, sort of allowing the audience to place themselves in the shoes of all of the characters. And I think that's a very, very challenging thing to do. And I think that not only speaks to Eric's abilities as a director and a writer, but also to the amazing acting of Jeremy and Taylor, who, yeah, you know, they are also not, you know, these are not good people. Nobody here is a good person. And everybody in the film has a different opinion on, you know, how the movie should progress. And we all deal with it in our own equally horrible ways. Well, maybe not all of us equally, but, you know, we all deal with it in our own ways. And I think that the film really does a great job of throwing the audience as well into that maelstrom and saying like, well, what the fuck would you do? You know, and that's a fun question and a fun thing to have in a horror film.
Yeah, for sure. And it'll be it makes me more intrigued to see it, and it must provoke a lot of different reactions if you have like a film like that where everybody's morally gray, and therefore whatever anybody brings to the table, they might end up kind of half supporting whoever whatever character that they think is the least reprehensible in the end, kind of thing.
Right.
And I guess that'll be different for right. everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's what's kind of so special about this movie is, you know, the quote unquote protagonist really does change, in my opinion, throughout the film. And that's really fun for me. Who do you side with? Who do you want to end up on top? Who is your proxy? And Eric does a great job of switching that around a lot during the film.
So I was also going to ask, you know, I know we've probably not got that much longer left, a couple more questions. Obviously, you've got three movies. It seems like it's three very different characters. Scare Package 2, your character is very fun, very goofy. You've got this character in The Leech who goes on this big narrative arc from very repressed and religious to maybe a bit more unchained. And then you've described your character in Christmas Bloody Christmas is maybe not the most savory of characters. And is that what you like, to just keep playing different characters, different tones of characters, different styles of characters, villains, heroes, goofy, you know, funny characters?
Yeah, I mean, the more different, the better. You know, the further afield that I can get from the last character I played, the happier I am. It's just fun as an actor, you know, and especially with stuff like Christmas Bloody Christmas and The Leech, you know, to a degree, kind of getting to be a little bit of a bad guy is really, really fun for me. With Scare Package 2, I was thrilled to get to stretch my comedic chops. You know, I started out in the world of comedy, and I haven't gotten to do that much comedy in a very, very long time. And so getting to like be funny in a movie was really exciting to me. So yeah, I want to do everything that I can, every type, every genre, every subgenre. And I've been really lucky, you know, that this year, you know, in addition, I will say, in addition to these three films, you know, a couple months ago, I was in a film that came out called Mystery Spot, which was another film that I'm just very proud of and proud of. You know, that was stretching more of the sort of intense dramatic muscle, you know, and it's still in the horror world, but more kind of intensely dramatic. And so just being able to kind of stretch all those different muscles and work on all those different projects and show different sides of what it can do, you know, that's what makes it really fun to be an actor. So I've been very lucky this year and very excited for everybody to get to see these films.
Excellent. And can you tell us anything about anything you're working on now, anything that might be coming out in 2023? And will we see you in the director's chair again at any point?
I am working right now on on trying to get another directing thing going. I'm hoping to have some news for that soon. You know, as far as films that I'm acting in, I mean, there's some stuff that I've shot this year. I don't know when it'll ever come out, you know, next year, so I can't really speak to that. I do have a book out that's called Godzilla, The Official Guide to the King of the Monsters. It's out worldwide. I got to work with Toho Studios on writing the official guide to the Godzilla franchise. And that was a real joy for me and a real honor. And so that's out now. in I believe in the US, it's on US Amazon, it listed as the older title, which is the Godzilla the Ultimate Illustrated Guide, but the actual title is Godzilla the Official Guide to the King of the Monsters. Okay. And so that's out now. I'm about to do a signing of that in LA. I'm excited to hopefully get another directing job going and you know, just keep sort of forging ahead with this wonderful adventure that is indie horror filmmaking.
Amazing. Well, whenever that directing gig comes to fruition, or you know, whenever you got new stuff out, I'm always happy to have you back in the show. It's always great to talk to you, Graham. So thanks very much for your time once again.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, it's always a pleasure to be here and a pleasure to chat with you and really, really happy to get to come on and talk about this stuff. So thank you for having me.
That was my guest, Graham, there, who I'd like to thank once again for coming on the show. Also, I'd like to recommend to all you listeners that you go out and check out the three films that we were talking about over the course of that interview. The Leech and Christmas Bloody Christmas are available now. The Leech on the Arrow Player, which is available in the UK, US, and Canada. I'm not sure where The Leech will be showing here in New Zealand or other places, but we will look out for that, and I will give any details when I have them. In terms of Christmas Bloody Christmas, it is available here in New Zealand, as well as Australia, UK, US, and Canada on Shudder. Again, if you're not one of the listeners in one of those territories, I'm not entirely sure where it's streaming, but I'm sure they will get a release somewhere. And finally, Scare Package 2, Rad Chad's Revenge, which will also be available on Shudder when it comes out on December 22nd. So as we discussed in the interview, it's going to be a very skipper Christmas. So yeah, make sure to check all of those goodies out. And yeah, in case you're wondering, no, I don't have any promotional tie-ins with Shudder. It just so happens I end up talking about their films a lot. Anyway, that just leaves me to thank you for tuning in to this latest episode of New Horror Express. I hope you enjoyed the show. And if it is your first time listening, or if you've been listening for a while, but you've not reviewed us, then you can do that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, where you can rate, review, and subscribe to us. And if you are making any reviews, please make those reviews 5 stars, because otherwise the algorithm thinks we are terrible, and hopefully you don't think we're terrible. So 5 stars, please. Unfortunately, that is all for this time, but be sure to tune in next time when I will have another great guest from the world of indie horror. Until then, though, see ya.